Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hola, buenos dias, bonjour, guten Abend. Hi, how you? Today's show brought to you by REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Rick Weibel, the man. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484, or you can go online to rewfinancial.com. Good afternoon to Lee as well. Sunbury Motor Studio, a.k.a. The Chateau. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. You want to really, really, really blow her away in the holidays? Put a bow in a vehicle. That would do it. That would do it. Christian Hackenberg's had an outstanding freshman season for Penn State. I would be shocked if he was not the Big Ten Freshman of the Year. Lindsey Schnell, writing for Grantland and also writes for the Oregonian in Portland, put together a feature on Christian and his family through all of this, and we welcome Lindsey to the show. Lindsey, what was it about this that you thought made it an intriguing topic?
Well, when I started to kick around ideas with my editor, she thought we kind of needed a Penn State check-in piece, and Christian was playing really well, and I said, you know, to me the most interesting part of it is, what does his parents think about this whole thing? You know, even though Coach O'Brien and the staff were new when everything happened at Penn State, you know, that's a parent's worst nightmare, right? And a lot of parents are watching their worst nightmare play out on national television for other families. So what do they think about sending their kids to a program that has this black eye? I think there were a lot of people in the aftermath of that that were angry at Penn State, even the people who had nothing to do with it. So I thought, and, you know, then you read about him, and his dad was an athlete, his mom was an athlete, he's one of four boys. So emailed his mom and said, hey, I'd really like to write this story on you, I'd like to get to know your family. And when she called me and she told me the little thing about watching the Manning documentary and how it, the Manning brothers, their pickup games out in our front yard would evolve into full-on sibling war, and she could identify with that, I thought, this is going to be a great piece. This is worth flying out there for.
Gave Cooper Manning a lot of plug, by the way, when they did that, which was a great, really well-done piece on the Manning family. How did the Hackenberg family then strike you? Not by comparison to the Manning family, but how did they strike you?
Oh, they very, very competitive. I mean, I asked Christian if they were allowed to, like, play board games in their family during holidays, and he said that kind of a no-go because people get angry and there might be some thrown game pieces around. But they were awesome. And, you know, the other thing about having two parents as athletes, they get it. They understand the pressures that he's under. They understand the expectation level that comes with it. And they're hard on him, but they're also very, very loving. So, and, you know, it was just typical brother stuff. I love the piece in the story when Brandon, the second oldest, comes down and he's yelling at the Penn State receivers, and then he's like, oh, I could throw a better pass than that. I'm a soccer player. And he pulled out his phone to text his brother during the game. They were wonderful. I grew up in a family of athletes, and I've been around a lot of families that all are athletes, but it was exactly what I expected.
The parents obviously are deeply involved in this, and you started out by saying, look, you know, they were part of the reason he ended up coming here. What is it about their character that struck you about them as patriarch and obviously the mom in the family?
I think the biggest thing is both of them were big believers in, let's not have a knee-jerk reaction. When the sanctions came down, both Nikki and Eric said, hey, let's take a deep breath. Let's go get information. They were all about gathering information throughout the process. And because both of them had gone through a recruitment in their, when they were teenagers, they understood how important that piece was, how crucial it was. And they also wanted him to do what he wanted to do. You know, they weren't trying to push him one way or the other. And when he said, Dad, this is where I really want to be, even despite all this, you know, I believe in Coach O'Brien, I believe in the program, they were really supportive of that. Their big thing was, you know, they wanted him to get a great education, and they needed to feel comfortable handing him over to whichever coaching staff, whatever school he went to. And I think that when they met O'Brien, they were just blown away. I mean, I was too. That was the first time I had ever met Coach O'Brien, and pretty awesome. So mm-hmm. I understand why they felt comfortable with it. And then they talk a lot too about keeping your promises. You know, you made a commitment to something, and if it's still viable, you need to stick with that. And that's been kind of a theme in their family. You know, when you have all these kids playing all these sports, sometimes you can get stretched thin. But I think it's just the way he was raised, and they believed that they were going to make a decision based off their feelings, their information, not what they're hearing from a bunch of outsiders who aren't part of the process.
How much pressure did he get from outside entities, and how did they hold it off?
Well, he told me that he got some crap from his friends more than anything about why would you want to go here, you know, after all the sanctions got announced. But I think for the most part, they did a good job shielding him, and he is, and you guys know this because you're around him, very poised, very mm-hmm. mature. I think he was able to tell coaches as well as anyone, hey, look, I'm committed here and I'm going to stick with it. They did a good job shielding him from it. And he made it very clear when he did decide to recommit after that meeting that they had that this is where he was going to be and he wasn't going to be swayed.
Talk about the meeting.
Oh, the meeting. Wow. It sounded pretty intense and pretty emotional. You invite 19 guys. You know, they signed 17 in that class, and for the parents, it was so hard. They wanted their kids, you know, your teenage, you want the best for your child, and you want your kid to have a decision that he's happy with, but at the same time, sometimes 17, 18-year-olds, they're not thinking about the future. So when the parents came in with that list of questions, they were thinking about everything that the kids weren't, you know, and then the kids add their 2 cents with, hey, are the freshman dorms air conditioned? And every parent I talked to said O'Brien answered every question and didn't get upset, didn't get offended by anything, told them up front, if you want to go take other visits, I understand. We just need to know because if you don't want to come here anymore because of this, we understand, but we have to have a plan B. And I think everyone in the room understood why that was important. But for you know, he stood up there for a couple hours, he said, answered everything, the things he didn't have an answer to immediately, he said, I'll find out. You know, he wrote it down. The whole staff talked about why they wanted to be a part of Penn State still, why they believed in the program and in the university. And then he left and he let the parents have a conversation with their kids, and the boys all of a sudden are just like, hey, we're doing this. We're sticking here. And Garrett Sickles' dad told me that all of a sudden they're just walking up and all the parents are like, where are you guys going? And they're like, oh, we're going to talk to Coach because we're going to stay here. So it sounded pretty amazing. And O'Brien said that when they came into his office and they all, you know, one by one, Coach, I'm going to be a part of this. Coach, I want to stay here, and shook his hand. I think it was a very, very big deal.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. That was another one of those line in the sand moments that went their way. Adam Brenneman, who had been hurt last year as a senior in high school, he had torn his knee in June a year and a half ago, made a couple trips down to watch Christian play last year and spend time with him. How much do you think that helped with the bond, and especially helped with, you know, solidify the commitment that the two of them would sign together in February of earlier this year?
Oh, I think it's huge. And one thing that O'Brien and Christian told me was early on when Christian had originally committed, he's a quarterback, he's a leader, he started to reach out to the other commits, hey, let's be friends, let's get to know each other, and they had really started to form pretty strong, deep relationships. Then the sanctions come out, and then they all go to this meeting together, and they're this little group of guys that they're already connected, they're a clique, they want to play with each other, they want to play for each other. I think that was a huge part. And Coach O'Brien said that, you know, he kind of rolled his eyes at all the social media stuff. He likes to call it Twitter and what is it?
Facebook, he calls it.
Or something. Like, he makes fun of all of it.
Yeah, he calls it Facebook.
How important it is in recruiting, because that's how recruits get to know each other initially. They tweet back and forth to each other, and then they direct message, and then they trade cell phone numbers. So I know that Adam and Christian were very close and that they wanted to go together.
Lindsay, anything in this story surprise you where you're like, you went now? Because you go in thinking, you know, sometimes you go in blank slate. Sometimes you go in thinking, okay, you know, let's see if we find this out. Anything surprise you?
I was with, you know, the Hackenbergs in that you see Belichick on TV and you think he doesn't look very friendly, and probably everyone who worked for him or has ever worked for him might be the same way. But Coach O'Brien was so warm, welcoming, friendly. I was pleasantly surprised about that, especially because I watched the Illinois game was the week before the Minnesota game, right? And when they won in OT and did a sideline interview right after the game, and I thought, oh, he doesn't look too thrilled to be talking with the media. I hope that it's better when I'm there next week. And it was great. But otherwise, I don't think so. I'm always happy to learn how welcoming people are. Today on Twitter, someone was asking me, how did you get so close to the family? How did you get that type of access? And I asked. You know, that's the bottom line. I think that if you ask, if you present a good idea, people are open to talking about it. And this is, all these parents of all these commits understand that Penn State didn't look very good, didn't have a great national image for a period of time. And they want to talk about why they still believe in it. So I wasn't necessarily surprised by the access I got, because I worked really hard for it, but I was still happy that it all worked out.
It's a marvelous piece. Very well done, very well written, very well researched, and we appreciate the time you gave us here today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm always happy to hear someone's reading besides my parents.
Lindsay, thanks so much. Lindsay Snell wrote this on Grantland and is with the Oregonian in Portland. We'll come back with more. Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484 or go to rewfinancial.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors is having the biggest Ford sale in the nation. Choose from over 400 new Fords with savings up to $10,300. And financing available for as low as 0% for up to 72 months. Pick from over 125 new F-150s. On sale as low as $19,979.
Prices haven't been this low since the turn of the century.
There's 35 of the fuel-efficient 2014 Ford Focuses. And SMC has them on sale for $14,490. Sunbury Motors has the largest selection of new Ford Escapes in a 13-county radius. Pick from 65 Escapes as low as $20,980. There's 33 of the award-winning 2014 Ford Fusions, and they're slashed to historic levels, starting at just $19,980. Find out why more people are traveling from as far away as New York, New Jersey, and Maryland to get the lowest prices on the largest selection of new Fords. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, proudly serving the northeastern United States for almost a century.
REW Financial believes in the value of total commitment. We are a working family who strives to prove strength of character by staying independent and core focused. REW has a commitment to the community and the financial needs of our clients. Let us design your portfolio or retirement strategy. REW Financial Lewisburg, the power of freedom. Securities and advisory services offered through United Planners Financial Services. Member FINRA, SIPC. REW Financial is a DBA of REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC, and neither are affiliated with United Planners Financial Services.
It's playing in the front yard, actually in the side yard of my house. I was 5 years old at the time. I was actually maybe about six weeks away from my sixth birthday. And neighbor across the street, Marge Lane, came running over and told my mother that My father was working second shift at the time of Pride and Whitney. He told my mother that President Kennedy had been shot. And we found out, obviously, he died. I remember that like it was yesterday. But I remember even more distinctly, though, is that I was watching that Sunday morning or that early Sunday afternoon when Lee Harvey Oswald was shot. I was actually watching TV at the time when it happened. I've been to Dealey Plaza twice. In fact, my room at the Ticket City Bowl less than 2 years ago looked out at Dealey Plaza to the point where I could see they have an X in the street where the president was hit. I could see the X clearly from my room. So it is fascinating, to say the least. I mean, I know this is not a... Although Bob Costas does a brilliant sports job on the angle of the story, and the angle of the story is the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys find out they're at practice on that Friday. They're going to play the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland that weekend. And they hear this, and the first thing they assume is there's no way they're playing. Pete Rozelle is the standard by which I think most commissioners in sports, and David Stern's close to this, the standard by which they are judged. How about that? Pete Rozelle made a lot of great moves in his career, getting the merger with the AFL. He knew he had to, but he still did it. The television deals, getting everybody to share money equally and so forth, getting Wellington Mara to say, you know what? It's good for the league if New York and Green Bay, Wisconsin both get the same television share. He negotiated the television deals and so forth. A lot of things Pete Rozelle did right in his career. One thing he did wrong was have the NFL play that weekend. And he knows that it was something he regretted. It bothered him all day as to why they're doing it. The AFL decided not to play. Now here's the upstart AFL, which in 1963 is now in its fourth season. They had a team in Dallas, the Dallas Texans, but they had moved in February of 1963 to Kansas City and had become the Chiefs, Lamar Hunt's team. So they were no longer in Dallas playing in the Cotton Bowl, even though they'd won the AFL championship in 62 as the Dallas Texans. And the AFL, boom, even though the upstart league decided right away we're not playing. Pete Rozelle knew the president, and he knew some of the president's people. And he evidently talked to Pierre Salinger, who had been President Kennedy's press secretary. And Salinger was not in Dallas that day. He was overseas. And in talking with him, and I guess Pierre Salinger had talked with Bobby Kennedy, they said, no, you can play. So he decides to play. Now, none of the games are on TV. All the networks have cut away for coverage. That's why I mentioned how the Oswald thing, we all of us saw it live on TV. I remember sitting in my parents' living room like it was yesterday, watching it on a black and white TV, him getting shot by Jack Ruby on national TV. It was scary times. That, and I remember how scary it was when Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy were killed within 2 months of each other. You're like, there were riots, and it was just, the 60s had so many awful moments, and this was one of them. This was the trigger to all the awful moments. And Pete Rozelle decided to play. Mike Ditka made one of the film you see of Mike Ditka with the Bears, breaking all those Pittsburgh Steeler tackles on one of the great catch and runs in the history of the NFL. That was that weekend. And he always regretted the decision. Said he went to church that morning, kept thinking about it, regretted doing it. Went to the Giants game that day at Yankee Stadium, regretted doing it. So one thing he did. Now, meanwhile, the Cowboys go to Cleveland to play. I mean, they didn't think they were going to play. And Art Modell instructed the public address announcer to refer to them as the Cowboys and not the Dallas Cowboys. Don Meredith had a terrible game. I think the Browns won it 27-17. Frank Ryan played pretty well for the Browns that day. I tell you, Jimmy Brown had a lousy game that day. He only had like 53 yards rushing. Bob Costas does a brilliant job and a brilliant piece looking back on the effect it had on Dallas and in part how the Cowboys helped resurrect Dallas's image by their play. Evidently, there was a point where they came out to warm up and the police officer at the dugout at Old Municipal Stadium in Cleveland, Tom Landry, gathered his team up and he pulled them over. He said, "They just shot Oswald." Landry said thanks and then turned back to his team and tried to get them concentrated on playing. I've seen the X in the street. Now, evidently, that X is painted on by other people. The city doesn't want the X in the street, but it's there. I'll say this, as somebody who's been there, the Texas School Book Depository, especially for somebody who was a marksman in the Marines like Oswald, is a point-blank shot. And so is the grassy knoll. It's really close.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yeah, I guess they paved over the X. Now, when I was there, there was one X. Okay. Now I guess there are a couple there, and I guess yesterday they paved over it. That's one thing I'll say, because I could see the X plain as day from my room. I stay at the Hyatt Regency at Reunion Center in Dallas. And I always said to myself, every time I looked at it out my window, and I looked at it for days, I thought to myself, that's where a man was murdered, and a daughter lost her father, and a woman lost her husband, and a brother would die, and the whole thing beyond being the president. I thought, that's kind of gauche. Well, evidently, the city is not the one that put the X there. I guess there are people that go in, and every time they remove it, they go out and somebody repaints it. Well, today, yesterday, they went out and they repaved it. Something like that. More on that tomorrow.
Well, there is a story talking about that in Tuesday's from CNN, that the X marking the approximate spot in Dallas where President Kennedy was assassinated is no more. The mark disappeared amid road work this week in advance of the anniversary. The city hasn't directly addressed the disappearance of the unofficial marker, but in a statement, the city spokesman said that the work was done to level out the streets and remove any trip hazards.
Yeah, sure. Look, they know it looks bad, for goodness sakes. I mean, come on. They know it looks bad.
I've watched about 10 specials in the last week and a half, and every one of them has a picture of that spot or the X on the road or...
Oh, sure it does, yeah. No. When it's captured on tape like that, it's one thing for us, for example, to sit here and talk about the Lincoln assassination. All right. And ironically, this was the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. Well, you could only read about it. This one, there's the Zapruder film. So it's going to analyzed and reanalyzed and so forth. And that's going to be coming up tomorrow. Now, does this have anything to do with sports? No. So I know that. But it's all, a lot of people are fascinated by it, which I completely understand. I remember Ron Moeller and I went over there. I had gone over there 30 years ago. Let's see, I had done a basketball tournament, too. Did a couple games at Reunion Arena. Stayed in the same hotel, in fact. And, yeah. So, yeah, it's 50 years ago. Tomorrow. The irony is President Kennedy was supposed to go to... President Kennedy was supposed to go to Gettysburg and turned it down to do the Dallas Strip. How about that? For the 100th. Supposed to be the 100th. He was supposed to go. And he turned it down. All right. So we'll have a special airing, what, at 10 tomorrow morning?
Yeah, it's Three Shots Fired. That'll be at 10 o'clock tomorrow from ABC News. Really good feature that had, or a really good special, rather, that actually has a lot of the audio and live coverage from Dallas and from the network as things were going on 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. History's a great teacher. And that's why I'm going to have John Bacon on, and we're going to talk about 40 years later, the Ohio State-Michigan game that ended in the tie. Ohio State, the athletic directors voted them to the Rose Bowl. It means Michigan had no bowl game and so forth. We're going to talk about that. Also, standards of coaches and so forth. Joe, Bo, Woody to a point. We're going to talk about that coming up. And I think you'll find that to be a fascinating conversation. A-Rod. Okay, the last time I saw acting like that on Broadway was Phantom of the Opera.
It did look a little staged.
A little. A little staged. He knew darn well that Bud Selig was not going to testify. Look, this is all about $35 million. That's what this is all about. $35 million. I remember, you know, the Red Sox were on the verge of acquiring Rodriguez. And the trade was going to be A-Rod to the Red Sox, Manny Ramirez eventually to the White Sox, and Maglio Ordonez going to the Texas Rangers. That was going to be the deal. And I sat back and went, I hope they don't make this deal. That's one of the best deals the Boston Red Sox never made. Eventually, he goes to the Yankees. Manny stays in Boston, and for all of his troubles, we know about his troubles, but helped, you know, was a part of two of the three World Series championships. He has a 211-game suspension. They evidently have, and now, according to his people, claim that they're going to show everybody evidence next week. Happy Thanksgiving. But that sure looks staged. We're walking out. We're, you know what? If he really wants to settle everything, why didn't he look at them and say, you know what? I'll not only take the stand, I'll take a polygraph as we do it.
I think what made people think of it being staged even more than the walking out part was the fact that he walked over to Mike Francesa in the WFAN studios and then used that as a forum, which is a great opportunity, seeing as they're right in New York. You know, their affiliation with the Yankees are pretty close.
Well, of course they are.
If you know what I'm getting at.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, Michael Kay, if it's on his show, then you could say, okay, because Michael Kay goes to the Yankees games. Francesa doesn't do the games. But if he, instead of going, look, what's easier to do? put your hand on a Bible and then tell and to tell you know and tell the truth there, or to get questions from Katie Couric or Mike Francesa. What's easier? If he wanted to clear everything up yesterday, he would have looked at them and said, you know what? This is how strongly I feel about it. I'll take a polygraph. Okay? How about that offer? Work for you?
Well, I think that's a start, but here's what I keeps running through my head, Steve, through this whole thing. He denies. Major League Baseball came out with a humongous career-ending suspension, knowing full well that there was going to be hearings on it, that this was not going to go without a fight. I can't believe that Major League Baseball would go into this with not having solid evidence that there was wrongdoing here by A-Rod. I don't buy it.
If he wants to clear it up, all he has to do is look at them and say, you know what? I will take a polygraph. I'll do that. They're not foolproof. But just the offer tells them that he's dead serious about it. Yeah. It's amazing how Von Miller gets a 6-game suspension. Everybody just takes it and they move on. He gets it. But Alex Rodriguez, I mean, he actually uses the word legacy.
Can you talk about your own legacy?
His legacy is in the garbage. There isn't a single stat he puts up that anybody believes. It's to the point where unless he wants to offer to take a polygraph, he's delusional, in my opinion, until he does. And you'll be amazed how he won't do it. In fact, you'll probably expect that he won't do it. Better yet, amazed is wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, I won't be amazed. I'll be shocked do it.
Of course. He won't do that. Why risk it?
But let me ask you, now I'm trying to dig up the audio because of rights and everything, it's a little complicated, but do you think, of what you've heard so far, that was a staged interview as well?
No, I want to give Mike Francesa more credit than that. How about that?
All right, that's fair.
Mike Francesa's a pro's pro. I'm not. Now, do I agree? Do my opinions match up with Mike Francesa's opinions? No, they do not. But I'm not going to condemn his professionalism. I think that would be wrong to condemn his professionalism and how he interviews. Now, everybody talks about he asked him this softball question, that softball question.
Right.
But he did ask him, have you ever used PEDs? No. Look, Kev, there's no way in an interview you're going to be able to pull a rabbit out of the hat against this guy.
Or you're not going to try and trip. And I don't think Francesa was going to try and trip him up. I don't think that intention either.
No, but there's no need to try and trip him up because, look, the guy is... I think Alex Rodriguez has done a brilliant job of convincing himself that he's fine. But why would you go to this guy in Florida for whatever reason when you're in New York? And why pick out this guy? Why go to this clinic? What was so magical about that? I think it's a legitimate question. Oh, it's so sad. This is what we talk about now. there's the Kennedy assassination's 50th anniversary is tomorrow, and of course, the offshoot of that was the Warren Commission. And the late Chief Justice Earl Warren had this great quote: "When I pick up the newspaper in the morning, I immediately go to the sports section because I want to read about man's achievements. Now the sports section looks like the front section." Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484 or go online to rewfinancial.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, yesterday, Mike Francesa with Alex Rodriguez, courtesy of Yes Network and WFAN in New York.
Well, I'll ask you the question. Were you guilty of any of these charges?
No, and I should have.
Did you do anything wrong?
No.
Did you do any PEDs?
No.
Did you obstruct just anybody, any witnesses? Did you do anything that they accuse you of doing?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
So you're guilty in your mind of nothing?
I feel like I should be there opening day.
Okay.
And that's what I'm working hard
for. You, and let's get that on the record. You say you did not do these PEDs that they're accusing you of doing.
You're correct, Mike.
Okay.
He went out there. Well, at least, you know, look, you ask, they answer. That's what it comes down to. You ask, they answer.
But I think the next question should have been, and I think it's a fair question. How can we believe your answer based on 03?
Right. That's a fair follow-up.
I mean, that's what I was waiting to hear next, and it never happened. It's just, that's the problem that I have with A-Rod right now. He sounds like he really believes what he's saying, and I'd like to believe him. But then I look back at 03 and I'm like, your credibility's gone now.
Right. Well, I think that's what this comes down to, is it's a credibility question. And his credibility is shot, and that's why everything he does now is looked at with a grain of salt. He's at a point now where he could tell the truth, and he's got too many skeptics around him. Public, media. And that's the issue for him right now.
But again, A-Rod's asking us to believe him and not believe Major League Baseball, where Major League Baseball just went out on a huge limb, suspended you basically for your career, and you're saying that they don't have evidence against you? That's hard for me to believe, that Major League Baseball would take that big of a risk in hopes that A-Rod wouldn't do anything and just take the punishment.
Especially when you're looking at a guy that has means. When you have somebody with means, they have the ability to fight back.
Absolutely.
He has a legal team. You know, if he's been able to keep some of his money per year, you're talking about a guy that's been making $25 to $30 million a year. You know darn well he's got cash. Well, when you have cash, you have means. When you have means, you can fight. And Major League Baseball knows that. They know that he has means. So for them to, as you say, Kev, go out on a limb like they did, they must have what they feel is pretty strong evidence. If they didn't have strong evidence, to fight somebody with means becomes a very long, protracted fight where you're not going to win and you're hoping your evidence holds up. Well, when you take a bold step like they did to suspend him as long as they did, they must feel pretty good about what they have.
But let's look at this from A-Rod's point of view. He has absolutely nothing to lose. If he doesn't fight this, his career's over anyway.
Yeah, you're right to a point. I mean, He loses out on the money and so forth, plus he also loses the money invested in his legal team to fight it. So he does have that to lose.
Well, I'm talking about from his baseball career point of view.
Yeah, baseball career. I mean, look, this is a $35 million money grab. This is what it comes down to. It's 211 games, so you're talking about it's 212 games, right? It's one full season plus 50 games, so it's 162 plus the 50 games. So that's what they're going after him. The other guys, for example, Nelson Cruz and Johnny Peralta are two examples of those who went through the 50-game suspensions and then played in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're done.
Right?
Their suspension's already been served. It's over.
In fact, their suspensions ended the final week of the season.
Right.
Nelson Cruz actually played in game 163 against Tampa Bay in that one-game play-in. And Johnny Peralta played all the way through the American League Championship Series. He was eligible for the final three games of the regular season. So they served their suspension. Now, Melky Cabrera could have played last year for the Giants, but the Giants refused to bring him back. His 50-game suspension was up during the playoffs last year. They could have put him on the playoff roster. They could have definitely put him on the World Series roster, and they elected not to. And for the Yankees, a huge quandary. And there's other parts in here, too. He has this clause in his contract about getting to 660 home runs, the Willie Mays mark, and getting to 700. Well, if he does that, and it kicks in all this bonus money for him, so this is even more than a $35 million money grab. This is so...
But if I'm A-Rod right now, I deny everything and hope for the best, because if he doesn't fight it, he gets suspended anyway. If he fights it and loses, he gets suspended. This, for him, is the only way out.
No, it's not. He can look in the camera and say, you know what? I'm dropping all this. What I did was wrong. I never should have done it. And I'll accept the penalty.
You believe that? I got a bridge to sell you.
No. I'm saying that is another way out, to actually sit there and stand up like a man and do this. Now, is that an option you're going to take? Two words: doubt it.
I was thinking fat chance, but it was in the same realm.
Sharp, same words. I'll tell you, that thesaurus you bought's paying off.